is the Hot Zone. Engaging with the news in a whole new way, international war correspondent Chuck Holton brings insight into areas of crisis and lets you help those affected.
Hi, folks. On today's Hot Zone, we've got a special guest, and I want to bring you Victor Avila. He's a former ICE agent, and he's got an incredible career working for our country, and actually just about gave the ultimate sacrifice. And I'll let him tell the story. Victor, thanks for being with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Chuck. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, tell me a little bit. First of all, just give us the two-sentence rundown about your career, who you are, and then we'll delve more into what you did for ICE and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I'm a retired ICE Homeland Security Investigation Special Agent. My specialty was dealing in mostly in human trafficking investigations, a lot of drug trafficking, arms trafficking, and human smuggling investigations as well as money laundering. Dealt most of my career in the border and, of course, in Mexico. And 10 years ago in 2011, my partner and I, Jaime Zapata, and I were ambushed by a Zeta cartel on an assignment on Highway 57 and between Monterrey and Mexico City, where we were ambushed and shot at over 100 rounds. And Special Agent Jaime Zapata tragically lost his life in the line of duty. I was shot 3 times and miraculously survived that ambush. And so I wrote the book, Agent Under Fire, about that incident and also stuff that we're going to talk about today is border security and what we're going through right now. And I've dealt with this for many, many years. It's not new to me. It's new to a lot of people, but I try to bring that expertise and kind of sound the not the alarm, but maybe it should be the alarm of what's going on, because it's affecting us in every corner of our communities.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Well, tell me a little bit about the lead up to the shooting with Jaime Zapata and what your career was like and what brought you to that place in just north of Mexico City.
So for me, it started, I was in El Paso at the field office in El Paso doing narcotics investigations, human smuggling, then moved into human trafficking, was heavily trained on that. Initially, I opposed that type of assignment. I wasn't familiar with what even human trafficking was and became very, very much an expert in that and doing those investigations. Then in the middle of all that, I was leading the human trafficking task force in El Paso. And there was an opportunity to go serve on the other side of the border in Ciudad Juarez. This was 2008 when Juarez was the most dangerous city in the world. They were having about 350 homicides there a month. And I got to go serve there, and it really opened and broadened my, you know, investigation skills and really dealing and seeing more than just your local investigation and broadening these investigations into these organizations. And that assignment in Juarez led to my permanent assignment as a U.S. diplomat accredited permanently in Mexico City to the ICE office over there. And so my family and I, we moved over there, and it was an incredible time as far as work. The most I've ever worked in my life. You know, I still had an idea that it's going to be a diplomatic post. Well, maybe, but in all intents and purposes, we were really working hand in hand with the government of Mexico, literally doing a lot of on-hand work when it comes to all those things that ICE and Homeland Security Investigations investigates. In my case, I was leading the Global Trafficking in Persons Initiative, taking down organizations, human trafficking organizations in Mexico that was bringing victims to the United States, all over the United States, women and children. So I was very successful in doing taking down a lot of these organizations, rescuing a lot of women and children from these horrific conditions. And then here comes an assignment in 2011. There was a case that I wasn't very, very much familiar with or involved with, but I got assigned to go, and they said, you're going to take Jaime Zapata, who had only been in country for a little over a week. He was working out of the Laredo, Texas office, and had just been in Mexico as a temporary duty agent to help out on an arms trafficking case. And we get sent to go pick up some equipment from our counterparts, our ICE agents from the Monterey office. We met halfway between Mexico City and Monterey. We drove about 5.5-6 hours, met up with them, picked up the equipment from them, which is large boxes, surveillance type equipment used for another case, a big money laundering case. And on the way back, at this point, Jaime was already driving, and two SUVs full of Zeta cartel members forced us off the road to the right shoulder, conducting a rolling roadblock. And eight shooters come out and ambushed us, basically shooting over 100 rounds at our armored Suburban. There's a lot of chaotic things that happened within there. My window was rolled down a couple of inches. Were they able to introduce an AK-47 and a handgun by my head? That's what ended up them shooting rounds into the cabin, striking me three times, striking Special Agent Jaime Zapata several times, and lethally. And a lot of things happened there. Eventually you got flown out to a hospital in Mexico after being on that road for about 40 minutes waiting to get rescued by the federal government, the Mexican federal government. And so you can imagine it was a big traumatic event. We lost an agent in the line of duty. There was some media about it, but then eventually kind of went away for several reasons. One, the weapons that were used, a couple of them that were used against us were weapons that were allowed to be walked, kind of like Fast and Furious, attached to Fast and Furious out of Texas. These are guns that were under the watch of the ATF, and they were allowed to go into Mexico and arm these criminal organizations. And so maybe because of that, it didn't blow up. And so as a survivor, I wrote this book to not only inform people of the memory of Agent Jaime Zapata and his ultimate sacrifice to our country in protecting our homeland, but also tell the people about my expertise and what I've done in trying to secure our border, and talk and lay out plans for solutions of what we're actually seeing a lot of today in the chaos that, and crisis that we have as you and I speak right now.
So I've just come from the U.S. southern border, and then from there went to Colombia and tracked the extracontinental migrants who are coming through the Darien Gap up through Panama and all the way up to the United States. And I've seen that there's a pipeline of people. And that pipeline got empty more or less over the time of the COVID crisis, but now it's filling back up again. And that pipeline is not just full of migrants. Tell me about how human trafficking comes in when it comes to that pipeline. Most of the people obviously coming up through there are coming voluntarily. But is there some element of human trafficking in that, at least in the way you would consider it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And by the way, you're correct with the extracontinental individuals. I call them special interest aliens. We call them SIAs in HSI, which I investigated as well in Mexico and interviewed a lot of them. They were there back then. They're there now. And we're talking about people from, as you know, Bangladesh, Somalia, Yemen, all these countries that have possible terrorism ties to these individuals. They're there. And by the way, they're coming in right now, exploiting and using these vulnerabilities at our border to come in with these caravans and try to seek asylum through there. But yeah, there is human trafficking. Not all of them are human trafficking cases. Most of these people, as you know, come voluntarily to seek asylum, but they're all going through the cartels. And that's the big difference now, is the cartels have taken over. We used to have the human traffickers and the human smugglers and the drug traffickers. Well, that no longer exists. It's not now all the cartels. You will encounter the cartels. You will have to pay the piso, the plaza, the quota to them, whether you're going to turn yourself in or not. These people are paying $3,500, $4,000 a head to even turn themselves in to seek asylum. And so we know that there's a lot of unaccompanied minors coming in as well. Children, again, not all of them trafficked, but there's an element of trafficking as well, because this is what's happening. There's a mass amount of people coming in and doing that, and it's leaving the rest of our our border wide open. And I just posted a video of a few days ago of a semi tractor trailer being offloaded near San Antonio, Texas, of you know, dozens and dozens of illegal aliens coming off, mostly males, young males, because they didn't come in and seek asylum. They're still being smuggled into this country. And that's where we see the trafficking. These trafficking victims are being smuggled initially, but they become trafficking victims when they're exploited, mostly for sexual and the sexual slave trade. And that's what I concentrate on in my career. And so we see these people from kids from all ages, teenagers, women, young girls, boys that are placed in these horrific conditions. That is still happening. And it happens in between the ports of entry through these smuggling ventures. So we can't ignore that. That illegal activity is still happening. And there's still people that want to come in here undetected.
The Hot Zone is produced by Amy Holton and Livefire Media.
Copyright 2021.